Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Cheryl Stillman, and welcome to What Women Must Know. It's great having you here. You know, these conversations are just so important. I just love the opportunity to bring together great people who have inspirational messages. And this is particularly relevant and important today because we're kicking off Breast Cancer Health Month. I mean, Breast Cancer Awareness Month. You know, this is a month, and I like to call it Breast Health Awareness Month because it's an opportunity and a focus on breast health, strategies to help prevent breast cancer, to help people and women who are going through breast cancer to really emerge victors in their life. So we're going to have a great conversation today and talking about lessons learned from a breast cancer victor with my guest, Dr. Diana Hopi. But before I go there, I just want to invite you, please go to my website, Dr. Cheryl Stillman, or my Facebook page, What Women Must Know, so I can send you these shows every week. And additional information, additional, you know, knowledge, additional special offers, all sorts of great stuff that I'll be sharing with you, either through my Facebook page or if you opt into my newsletter at Dr. Cheryl Stillman. So I'd love to have you part of my greater community. And, yes, it's Breast Health Awareness Month, and October is known as the Pink Ribbon Month. Whether you're into the pink ribbon or not, I think there's a lot to be learned when we have a whole month to focus on a really huge issue, a serious problem that I believe statistics are 1 out of 7 women are being diagnosed with breast cancer, and it seems to be increasing in the ages at which women are being diagnosed are getting younger and younger and younger. So we have to wake up to what's going on, and we have to take proactive measures and start really understanding some of the underlying dynamics that drive this condition so we never head in that direction. And if we have headed in that direction, what do we do to make sure that it never recurs in our life? So to help us on this journey of greater awareness for Breast Health Awareness Month is my very special guest and friend, Dr. Diana Hopi. A little bit about her. She is a board-certified OBGYN in private practice in North County, San Diego. She has over 25 years of clinical experience and has been a clinical investigator for multiple drug trials involved in perimenopausal and menopausal health. She is a dynamic international public speaker on women's health and is the award-winning author of the book Healthy Sex Drive, Healthy You, What Your Libido Reveals About Your Life. And in 2018, she launched Amazing Over 40, the first online resource for women and men to understand the hormonal changes happening to their bodies to live the fullest lives from 40, 50, 60, and beyond. So she is a dynamic woman, has lots to share, including her own journey with breast cancer. So, Diana, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you so much, Cheryl. Love to be here.
You know, we've had conversations in the past. You've been a guest on the show. You've always had such great inspiration. But your journey has taken some, you know, some interesting twists. So why don't we just start this conversation and sharing what has been your journey in the past year that led you to this diagnosis, and then we'll talk about what you've learned and some suggestions you have out of that learning to support other women.
Absolutely. Yeah, thanks. It was actually very crazy in that I was just going for my annual screening mammogram. So I was just going, and this is last January. So this is talking January 2018. And I went every year for my annual screening mammogram. And what's interesting is I normally get it in December, the end of December, Christmas time, I'd always go in. But when I wanted to go in December at this time, the 3D machine was out, was not working. So 3D means three-dimensional with tomosynthesis, which is the really screening I recommend for all women, and we can touch into that further on. But bottom line, I have dense breasts, and so every year I would get the 3D mammogram. So I said, okay, let's do it in January when the machine's up again. So I had it done in January, and then the radiologist calls me that evening and says, you know, there's a problem on your mammogram, which we never want to hear that, you know, from anybody, much less the radiologist calling you at home. So bottom line, as I went through a stereotactic biopsy, it showed atypical cells, and then I had to go to surgery to remove that area and had a lumpectomy. And that means removal of the tissue that was involved. And again, this was something that hit me like a, crazy, because I was then diagnosed with cancer. And I'm like, what do you mean I have cancer? You know, it was really crazy because I never saw myself as, you know, we never think we're going to get cancer. And I'm 55 at the time, so I'm now 56. And then I had to go through another surgery, which is called the sentinel lymph node. And if anyone wants to know all of this information more in detail, please feel free to go to my website, drdianahoppe.com, and that you can see it all, you know, written down in a synchronous fashion. But bottom line is, then I became the patient. So it was really a turn of the tables, and that I, as a doctor, became the patient. And it was really crazy when you think about how that made me feel and how much more compassionate I got toward my patients who were going through this kind of thing. And so then, luckily, the lymph node was negative, which was great news. And I didn't need chemotherapy. I just needed radiation. So I had 4 weeks of radiation, and then I had a follow-up. And now I'm scheduled for my repeat mammogram in November to just basically get rechecked. But it was like definitely a roller coaster ride last year. So sorry, I made a synopsis there.
So what stage was your breast cancer?
Luckily, they caught it really early. And that's because in the 3D mammogram, they saw what they call an asymmetry, which is a thickening of tissue. And that's what spurred the radiologist to call me and say there's a problem and we need to investigate further. So at stage one, which is very self-contained, which is, well, it's still in, you know, invasive breast cancer, but it was not gone to the lymph node. So stage one, which is great prognosis. So then after the radiation, my risk of recurrence in 5 years is about 5%. That's following radiation. Had I not gotten the radiation, it would have been about 10 to 15% of five-year survival. I mean, recurrence risk.
So it was stage one. It was wasn't considered. It was non-invasive, right? So you do this mammogram every year, and so it was 12 months since your last one, and no inkling, right? No inkling that anything.
And no symptoms. You know, people say, oh, breast cancer, you get symptoms, and, you know, sometimes if it's pain, it's not cancer. I didn't have any pain. I didn't have any symptoms. It was just my basic screening mammogram, and I'm so fortunate that the radiologist picked it up, and I had a 3D mammogram because, to be honest, on the two-dimensional mammogram, they did not see it. And that's why I'm somewhat of a real advocate for 3D tomosynthesis mammography, because it is more sensitive and there's less callbacks. That means they have less errors on what they see and it's more sensitive. So, as I said, I was very fortunate that they caught it on that mammogram and the screening annual mammogram, and then I was able to get really amazing care thereafter. So I can now talk about it and say, you know, every woman, I believe, should get screened. I know there's some controversy about mammography, but I personally am someone that could say as a witness to it that it actually helped me, and they found it very early.
Right. So do most clinics have 3D?
I think it's becoming more of the standard of care, although it's not yet enforced as it has to be mandatory. So most women still might just get the two-dimensional, but if you have dense breasts or you feel like you have some kind of fibrocystic changes, just ask your physician or your provider to order the three-dimensional, or they also call it tomosynthesis, T-O-M-O, tomo. And that's going to be the more sensitive way to look at the breasts from a three-dimensional perspective.
Right. So let's dive a little deeper, Diana, because there were other dynamics going on from this event that really had to be addressed in your life. So let's talk about some of those lifestyle or just some of those things that you realized, or that this condition, that having had this diagnosis, made you look at that you weren't looking at before.
Yeah. That's a great question, because it really was a wake-up call. And I think as women, we tend to think we can do it all. We load our plates with all these things that we have to do. I was at the time, I have my own practice. I'm in private practice, so I'm running my own practice, which is just GYN. I don't do babies anymore. They were wonderful, but I like to sleep now at night, which is really nice. And so I had my own practice, and at the same time, I was taking care of my mom in a sense, and she has Alzheimer's, well, she has dementia, not Alzheimer's, but a form of dementia called microvascular dementia. And she was living up in the Sierra Nevadas called Mammoth Lakes, which is about a 6.5-7 hour drive from San Diego. So once a month I was visiting her up there and kind of managing the caregivers. And this was through 2016, 2017, 2018. And so it got really stressful, and I was going up basically once a month. And then it got to the point where my mom got really sick in 2018 in February, so about a month after I was noted to have the abnormal mammogram. She had to be admitted to the hospital. She had a UTI, urinary tract infection, went to pneumonia, then she got septic, and then she had AFib, atrial fibrillation. So I, you know, drove up there, and she survived that event, and then I was going through my own event, kind of paralleling in my health condition. And then when I got the diagnosis of cancer, it was truly stopped in my tracks, because I thought, I never saw the word cancer with my name. It was just not something that I could perceive. So when it happened, it was somewhat surreal. And I'm like, why did this happen? How could this happen? And then I started thinking about all that I was doing and all the stress in my life. And I do believe stress had a huge component to this diagnosis. So my stressors were my job, my finances, my mom's health, moving her down. I then moved her to San Diego to be closer to me so that I could take better care of her, because she really needed now memory care facility and more diligent 24-hour care. But it really made me think about what I was doing in my life and how much I was working. As women, sometimes we work, and it's not just work in the office or working at your job, but we also work at home. We take care of our families. I don't have any children, but I had my children were like my books that I write, the blogs I write. I do a lot of projects, and my family, my mom was a whole other aspect. So when I looked about what I was doing, I really realized I was like in a 24/7 type of go, go, go. And I think a lot of the listeners can probably relate to that. So I think that part of the reason I got this diagnosis is that I could be an inspiration for women and realize that your health is the most important thing in your life. Because without your health, there really is nothing. You can have the most money, the most cars, the biggest house. But if you don't have the health to live your life, there's nothing left. So it really made me make choices in my life to change. And it was amazing. So I'll kind of stop there and see if you have any questions about what I've covered thus far.
So you were, would you consider yourself a type A personality?
Oh, I would call it AAA.
So,
some have called me AA and some have called me AAA personality.
Okay, AAA personality. So where do you think that behavior came from?
Interesting. I think it was my growing up. I was the youngest of four children. Both my parents are German, and my dad was a psychiatrist. My mother a psychologist. So it gives you a little background about how I was shaped in the sense of just that's my family upbringing. And we were very much you had to work to basically that was your substance, like that was your meaning. So to work was really important. And to earn things, you always had to work in order to have fun. And I think some of it was self-induced also. I was very much of a perfectionist. I wanted to do everything correct. I was very self-maintained, too, that I didn't ask my mom for that much because I was the youngest of four, and she had four kids 1 year apart. So it was really hard for her because it seemed like she was just trying to juggle, you know, survive. And so I didn't want to be that much of a burden to her. So some of my self-induced kind of AAA was just saying that I can do it all, and I don't need help, and I'm not going to ask for help, and I can do it all myself, which now in retrospect, I realize, you know, people are there to help us. I mean, they want to help us, and that we need to ask for help when we need it. And it's not necessarily a weakness to say, hey, you know what, I need help. And, you know, where can I get it, and how best can I achieve that? So I think it was somewhat family-induced, somewhat self-induced, but I was very much of a, I got to be perfectionist, I can't make mistakes, I always have to be the best. And now I realize, you know what, I don't have to be the best. And I know it sounds kind of silly, but I don't. Good is good enough. I don't have to be perfect. I don't have to do everything to the highest extent. I mean, yes, I'm still competitive. I play tennis and I want to play well, but I also have like a perspective on it that I want to have fun and do things in life that I want to enjoy. And I don't have to do things that I should do or I feel guilty to do. So I really made that as a choice. When you mentioned what changes did I make, one of them was saying to myself, do I really want to do this or am I doing this out of guilt? And if it came out of guilt, I wasn't going to do it anymore. Because I think we put that on ourselves, like we should do this, we should do that, and that person might be angry if we don't do this. And I just realized, you know what, you're not going to please everybody, and it's okay. So that's just a few lessons.
Well, I mean, that's such a wake-up call because, you know, with women who have a diagnosis, really with people who have a diagnosis of anything, it's a huge wake-up call to review and reevaluate the choices we're making in our lives. And certainly with women with breast cancer, which is about, it's like a whole psychological way to look at it, which I think has some validity. It's like the breasts represent nurturing. And when when women are driven, and I mean, there's this statistically showing that when women are either driven or so much other focus, you know, taking care of everybody else and themselves last, that there is a correlation to the stress that's created that manifests as breast cancer. So it's like no accident. Body's talking to us, right?
Absolutely. So when this happened, and I love that you brought that up, is that when this happened, it was my left breast. And as you said, the breast is nurturing, caring, you know, giving milk to the child and feeding, nurturing. And left is feminine. And so I was looking at what I was doing, and I was trying to nurture everybody, but I wasn't really nurturing myself. I wasn't giving myself the joy, replenishment, energy needed to sustain. So I think the universe, if you think of it that way, I thought that it was kind of a wake-up call in so many ways and saying, you know, you have to stop. So it definitely resonated with me why it happened and why it was my left breast.
And when you're driven like that, it's such a masculine energy, right? You're, you know, out there achieving, accomplishing at all cost, you know, just forge ahead. It's such a masculine way to operate in the world, which is how so many of us are conditioned, which is such in contradiction to who we are as women and the needs we have to stay healthy and balanced as a woman.
Absolutely, agree. And when I was going through residency, there weren't that many women in OBGYN. There's mostly a male-dominated field. So it was really like an uphill battle. You had to swim upstream. I always felt like a salmon swimming upstream, like because it was a big boys' club, and it was very difficult. And now it's gotten a lot better because a lot more women are entering those fields. Yet I do agree that sometimes in a male-dominated field, it's difficult to shine and really show what your abilities are because you almost had to work twice as hard as the men had to do. And I saw that in the surgical residence. At first, I was going to go into general surgery. And I did my internship and residency at UCSD. And I went to med school also at UC San Diego. And I saw the female general surgeon, the residents in general surgery, and they were so unhappy. And I thought, wow, they're working so hard and they're just miserable. Whereas the OBGYN, they were tired, but they weren't miserable. They were still happy. And I thought, you know, I could see myself go down that pathway of just being miserable and just trying to fight. And I thought, I can fight, but only so much. Because you kind of have to choose how many battles you want to fight. So I decided to go into OBGYN, which was a great field for me. I loved it because I love taking care of women as they age and the whole process. So it all worked out beautifully, but I know that there's certain times in life when you have things that hit you that you say, okay, that's the reason I'm not going to take that path. I'm going to take this other path and go left rather than right.
So that was a big wake-up call, which you wouldn't have had if you didn't have that diagnosis, right?
Right. And so I really want to tell the listeners that I'd hope that you don't wait as long as I did to actually take care of yourself, because I was so stubborn, I was so driven, and I was pretty much set in my ways that this is stuff I had to do. I had to do X, Y, Z, and I had to do it perfectly within the time frame I had. And so when I got this diagnosis, I said, well, you know, can I just defer the surgery for a little while? And my breast surgeon is like, no, you can't do that. And I said, well, my mom, I got to make sure she's okay. She said, no, we do not sit on atypia. At the time I had atypia, not cancer. That came out when I did the lumpectomy. But I had said, well, maybe I could just, you know, wait a few more months. And she said, no, we're not doing that. I'm the doctor. You're the patient now. And this is what has to happen, which was really good for me because I needed someone to really shake me and say, stop. This is what's happening. This is the reality. and we now have to move forward, and it's not always under your control. Because as I said, I'm a type A, I like being in control, and now I was really out there with no control. I had no idea what was going to happen. And when I went for the surgery for the lymph node, I really was thinking, holy moly, what if it turns out it's positive? And so I had to have faith in just the universe and just say, you know, the serenity prayer. I think I mentioned that to you, the serenity prayer, where, you know, there are things you can control and there are things you cannot control, and hope to know the difference between the two. And I just let it go and said, universe or faith, God, whatever, please just let me be able to survive this and do the best I can with whatever happens, because I have to just accept it, and that's how it is. So one of the phrases I had is, it is what it is. And I tend to use that quite a bit these days, because you never know what's going to happen. And it is what it is, and we then do the best we can given the situation.
So what's changed for you now and how you're choosing to live your life, do your practice?
Yeah, I'm really trying to get easier on myself. And that would mean, like, not working. When I leave work, I leave work. I don't bring work home. Before, I used to do more work at home, maybe do some charts, and now I definitely don't do that. I just write blogs once a week for my site, my Amazing Over 40 site, which I love to do. But before that, I was also doing video every week. Facebook Live. I don't know why I got confused with FaceTime. Anyway, Facebook Live. I was doing one of those every week, 2017, 2018. So I was just a lot on my plate. I was trying to get the Amazing Over 40 site up and all the content. And so now I just said, you know what? It's going to take whatever time it takes. It takes a little longer. That's okay. If I go to work and I say, I'm just tired, I don't want to do any more work after I'm done with patients, I just rest at home. I let myself watch tennis. I love watching tennis, all the different tournaments and things that are on. And I just give myself breaks on the weekends. I used to work on the weekends and do a lot more things, again, blogs, content, writing. And now I let myself have a whole day that's free. I don't do anything that concerns work. And I try to find something fun to do. And not pressure, but like maybe there's an event happening, or maybe it's good weather, I go for a hike, go to the beach with a friend. Just make it about being outside and loving nature. Connecting with nature has been something also that I've really realized that has helped me and makes me feel like more faith and more connected with everything, the earth, people. It's just being with nature is also huge in my life.
But, you know, that's such a major shift, right? I mean, you would, left to your own devices, you would work 24/7 in some way or other. Even though you thought it was fun, it's still, truth of the matter is, it's still work, still demanding of your energies.
Yes.
And
I didn't really think it was fun all the time. I didn't think it was fun all the time. It was work. I mean, there are times where I kind of say, golly, I got to stop. This is getting too much. But, you know, sometimes you just do what you have to do. And when my mom was sick and I had to get her down to San Diego, you know, I had to get her packed in a day and drive her down, get all her belongings that we could do and drive her to San Diego, get her moved into the memory care. And that was just like within a 24-hour period. So sometimes because of things you get done, but then you can look at it afterwards and say, well, how can I learn from that? And maybe in the future, I don't have to necessarily make it that difficult or make it within that time frame.
Or how to take care of yourself when you're in the midst of that demand. I heard a statistic yesterday that there are 40 million caregivers in the United States. 40 million caregivers. And that's huge demand, because I was very involved with my mom, and she was living in New Jersey. I'm here in Tulsa, so I'd be flying whenever the need was. And, you know, often there was, you know, she was admitted to the emergency, I'd go out there. But, you know, whatever was required, and if I'm not there, you're still worried and concerned. So it's a really stressful time when you're a caregiver. And in that process, as you're learning, as I'm learning, we need to find ways to take care of ourselves, because the stress of our lives, however we're living it, if we've been conditioned, brought up, and, you know, chosen behaviors of being, you know, type A personality, workaholic, or whether life puts demands on us, somehow we have to learn how to take care of ourselves in the midst of whatever storm may be brewing. which is such an important lesson to learn, to take time out and nurture oneself.
Time out. And I want to piggyback on that one, we put more and more on our plates and we don't stop. We're almost like robotic. We just sometimes just go through the motions because we have to. And that's where I think this diagnosis for me made me say, I need to be an advocate for women to understand that they have to put themselves first at times. You can't put yourself at the end of the list. You know, right now some of us are sandwich generations. They may have kids and parents you're also taking care of, and you're taking care of your the family, the household, so many things. And it's kind of like you, the women in general, need to really step back and say, okay, how can I take care of myself amidst these certain demands I have? And what demands can you take off your plate? And how can you get help from certain sources and caregivers and other people that might help in this situation? I see patients every day, you know, they're just so tired, they're stressed, and they just don't know what to do. And part of the reason I wrote that book about libido is I realized how many women, at the end of the day, they really not necessarily thinking about sex because they are so tired, they are so done with everything, that the last thing they really want to do is have sex. So it woke up my mind in that whole segment of my practice also about what are the factors that go into sex drive and how that's so related to stress also.
Yes, and stress is such a driver for all chronic illnesses because of its effect on our physiology, driving up our stress hormones, which affects our insulin levels, which affects inflammation and oxidative stress. Such a major driver, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And they estimate at least 3 out of 4 doctor visits are due to stress. And that more than 60 to 70% of illnesses are due to stress. And it's crazy when you think about how we might actually have a little more control over our lives than we think. And I mentioned that at a conference we attended together, Cheryl, I talked about epigenetics, which is the field of looking at how our lifestyle choices affect our DNA. And our DNA definitely predisposes us to certain conditions, but within that DNA, we have the ability to make choices that are better choices regarding our lifestyle to help decrease our risk for inflammation and the risk of cancer or other chronic diseases. So I think that's an inspirational type thing, the way to look at it, that our choices do affect our life, but in a good way if we make good choices.
So I'd like us to continue that conversation, this direction. I do nutrigenomic testing, so I've done that for many, many years, looking at a lot of the inherited predispositions. I call it the software glitches that we inherit.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I can tell you, Diana, that when it comes to risks for chronic illnesses, particularly things like breast cancer, out of the hundreds that I've done, you know, 95%, put it that way, it's probably even higher than that, have inherited a glitch that impairs their ability to properly detoxify in their liver the various form of estrogens that we're exposed to. So their ability in the two stages of the liver, phase 1, phase 2, are impaired. Therefore, when they're trying to eliminate the estrogens that are either from the environment or what we make, our own estrogens, they turn into very dangerous free radicals if you can't properly detoxify. They make a super badass estrogen that can actually lead to DNA damage. I don't know if you have investigated that or have come across that, but I see it in the nutrigenomic testing that I do.
Yeah, when I think about what environmental factors are involved, I do think that we have a lot of toxins in our environment that are hormone dysregulators, which means they affect our own DNA and our own production of estrogen, but then they mutate that cell so that it will make potentially more cytokines, more inflammatory markers, more inflammation, potentially change that DNA so it's more of a cancerous. The protein formed will actually be more likely to cause a cancerous formation. But I don't know if our own estradiol does that. So I think we may differ a little bit on that aspect, but I do think that when we look at the things in our environment, the hormone disruptors, they're all over the atrazine, the BPA, different things that we don't even know we're being exposed to that can put us at higher risk for different types of conditions and types of cancer.
So what I have found is one of the best nutraceuticals to take to help with that conversion of all these estrogens, whether, you know, environmental or whatever, is broccoli seed extract. Do you take a broccoli seed extract? Do you know about that?
I know about broccoli in general and the cruciferous vegetables and how they really help, but I don't take that, and I'd definitely be looking into that because I think that there are ways we can decrease our risk and risk of recurrence. As I mentioned, mine's about 5% now at 5 years of the risk of recurrence with stage one, but I think we all can find ways to decrease our risk. It could be dietary, it could be physiological with exercise, meditation. So I definitely like that whole holistic approach to things, because I think that we do have more control over what happens to us than we think.
So what are some of the other changes you've made? Dietarily, do you do meditation?
Yeah, I try meditation. I've been meditation, you know, I'm still a student. But I am trying to slow my mind. And every day I do take about a minute and do these breathing exercises, where I will just take a breath in for 5 seconds and then take a breath out for 5 seconds. I do that 6 times. That's actually 60 seconds. So it's really cool because it makes me just slow down. And when I'm driving, mm-hmm. I sometimes just turn the radio off. I'm like just breathing. I just breathe. I look at the stoplight. Mm-hmm. I do my breathing exercises. I don't try to have that much disruption in my life in the sense of lots of things happening. I think as women, we tend to multitask also. And as I think you know, Cheryl, that's not a good thing to multitask. We think it is, and we think, you know, this is great. I can do X, Y, Z all simultaneously. But studies have shown that multitasking causes more errors and more energy. We expend more energy and make more errors. So one of the things I've been working on is really focusing on one thing at a time. So doing one task at a time. So even in the office, if I'm doing an exam, I am just doing that exam. I'm not asking questions at the same time. I'm really focusing on what I'm doing. And then I'll ask a question after I've done, let's say, the exam and you have other things. But I really am not trying to do two or three things at a time. So that's one of the things I really think the listeners would appreciate. And if they could try to do that in their lives too, would help decrease some of the stressors that we encounter.
There are some interesting studies that talk about multitasking, and the brain doesn't like multitasking, actually.
No, it does not.
You don't function well. You think you're more efficient, but no, you become less efficient if you multitask in life. It is important to just focus. That's a really great insight and practice to put into action in your life. To just let our listeners know that we met at a conference sponsored by Geo Wellness, which is a company that I've been involved with, you've been involved with, that has many technologies to help us survive and thrive in this modern age. And one of the technologies that they have and the education that goes around it is the impact from exposure to EMFs. Which I'm really concerned about, and I'm sure you are too. So can we talk a little bit about what your insights are about the wireless world we're in and how you think that may have an impact on increased risk of breast cancer?
Yeah, I think breast cancer has a lot of different potential reasons for it developing. I think the stressors can mean so many things in life when you think about what the stress means. But we do get stress from electromagnetic radiation, which is what you're referring to. And now with the 5G coming out, we now know that they're going to need more of those cell towers and they'll be closer together. And we're going to be literally bombarded by electromagnetic radiation, which is not what our body really wants. We should not be around this type of radiation. And it affects our cells. And I know, Cheryl, you've done so many different great shows with different scientists about this and how the membrane hardens, our cell membranes harden, and we can't get rid of toxins and how we don't let nutrients in. So it's a huge field, and I think so many of us are unaware of what the impact is going to be, especially for children and even newborns, the fetuses, pregnant moms. It's now become so much more thinking, oh, we're going to be more smart. We have this technology. We'll be better connected. But to what detriment to our health? And that's really a scary thought because there's really not much regulation in this area, which I think we can also touch upon if you'd like. But it's I don't want to scare people, but I think it's something that we need to take action on and find ways to help decrease our risk of electromagnetic radiation, which is what Gia Wellness is all about. And I personally think it is a great company with regard to that. And I know you're a real advocate also.
Yeah. So you use all the protections, all the technology that protects your phone and Wi-Fi and all the technology in your environment, right? Because that
absolutely. And what's interesting is that, you know, I have nieces and nephews, and my nephews are like, oh, this, you know, this doesn't work. And I'm like, you don't necessarily have to understand it all. Just please, you know, I give them cases and the chips before, but now I give them cases for their cell phones so that it helps protect against the thermal effect and the Wi-Fi effect. And they're kind of like, oh, you know, that's kind of crazy. I'm not really sure if that works. And I said, you don't need to understand it. Just please believe me and just put it on your phone. Because down the line, I think it's going to come out that people will realize what the detriments are from this technology with regards to the Wi-Fi. But I think that sometimes people want to know all the answers of how it works, et cetera. And I think now Gia Wellness has great information on that. But sometimes I say, just put the self, you know, put the case on and don't worry about it. And to my sister, right. I say, and don't put it in your bra. Please don't put your cell phone in your bra. Does that?
Does your sister do that? Does she put
yes.
her?
Yes. And I said, just please put the case. Please use this because that way you won't have the thermal effect or the other effect from the radiation going to your breast. Because as you know, there have been studies looking at some women who develop breast cancer from their cell phones and the actual cancer. The actual when you're looking at how it's on mammography or radiation, when you look at X-rays, it shows the cell phone kind of like the perimeter. It's crazy. So when people say, oh, cell phones don't affect it, I think we're going to see, unfortunately, a lot more cases of that in addition to maybe brain tumors and other things that we know cell phones can do to different parts of our body.
You know, there was a piece done on, I don't know, one of the news programs or current affairs program that was interviewing this woman in her early 40s, and she's Asian, no history of breast cancer in her family, lived a healthy lifestyle, and always put her phone in her bra so she would, you know, whether she's working out or whatever, exercising.
Right.
And she was diagnosed with breast cancers that were, when they found them, they were in an outline of the phone where she held it in her bra, like these little micro
calcifications. Exactly. Right.
And it was an outline. I mean, and she, I mean, it was, they did a really good story about that on television because there was no, and her doctor even agreed, there was no other way that that could have occurred other than from exposure to her cell phone. I mean, you think about it, an outline of your phone. I mean, what is the likelihood of getting these cancers,
right,
these small cancers in the outline of a phone in your breast? You know, it's not just a random happening that was caused by the microwave radiation emitted by her phone when she was unprotected. That was so stunning. That was such a stunning piece. I mean, shocking, right? It was shocking.
Yeah. It was crazy, and when you think about it, and I think there's a kind of few cases of that in that one segment you're referring to. I think there are a few women that they diagnosed with that same kind of outline where they put the cell phone. So just like I think maybe we're talking about some of the things you can do to decrease your risk for developing types of cancers, but definitely use the technology that helps prevent this, and don't put it in parts of your body that can be affected detrimentally, such as men, if they put their cell phone in their pocket, you know, by their pants in the lower area, they can actually have decreased sperm count and lead to infertility. So I think more and more as we see this Wi-Fi getting more 5G technology, getting, quote, better in people's minds, we're going to see some worsening in certain conditions.
Yeah, it's pretty scary. So what other things have you learned, and what do you recommend to your patients as far as choices with diet or supplementation, or, you know, just some of the other strategies that out of your experience you really are trying to emphasize to your friends, patients, that they need to implement?
Yeah. That's a great question. I think dietary-wise, I was always relatively healthy. And just to give your listeners another background, I don't have any family history of breast cancer. I don't have a mother or sister or aunt, no maternal or paternal history of breast cancer. And I really didn't have a lot of risk factors that I could say, for developing breast cancer. So when it hit me, it was really one of those curveball type things in life where you're like, what? This happened. So that just gives a little bit of background about how my history with regard to breast cancer. But nutritionally, I've really tried to eat more fish. I don't eat that much meat anyway. Try to limit my alcohol, although I do like my wine here and there. But limit that a bit. Exercise is huge. Exercise, I've always liked to exercise, but now I really try to do 4 or 5 times a week. Walking outside, I got a little dog that makes me walk, which is great. So I get out there and walk like 45 minutes, taking him for a walk and play tennis, go for hikes. Just being with nature, I think, is a great connection also. And I think something that we all could do better is having an attitude of gratitude. Really be grateful for all we have in our lives and know that it's a process, that we get challenges thrown to us all the time. And how do we react to those challenges? Do we react with anger and hatred or like this disbelief, or do we come from more of, maybe this is a lesson, what can I learn from it and move on? Because a lot of times people would think about what I had to say, well, weren't you angry? And I said, at first I was just frustrated because I couldn't understand it, but then it all really kind of made sense to me. And now I take it as a blessing, that it was really a blessing that I was able to look at my life and wake up and say, how do I want to live? And that makes me think about travel. I love to travel, and I let myself travel now and just not get worried about finances as much. I mean, yes, there's never going to be enough money in your 401k, but really, how much do you need to live on, and how much do you want to experience life with your family and my nieces and my nephews? I love spending time with them. And now is the time I feel like, you don't know what tomorrow is going to bring, and do it. Don't delay and say, someday I'm going to do something. Someday may never come, and got to live every day and cherish it. So I mentioned to you, Cheryl, that I'm going to go to Africa next year. I'm going to go on a safari, and I'm really, really looking forward to that. It's something that's on my bucket list for years, and now I'm like, nope, I'm going to do that next year because I want to live my life, and I'm going to live my life to the fullest and do the best I can for my patients as well as for me.
That's great. You know, it's so true that we put off things, put off when we retire, we just keep putting it off when we have the money. But what is life about? What is life about? Yeah, and how are you going to really embrace life and enjoy life? And I think getting a diagnosis, such a wake-up call. One of the sayings that I've come across recently is that you can't heal in the same environment that got you sick. You can't continue doing what you've always done, change nothing, and expect because you have a surgery, a lumpectomy, go through whatever, that you're going to be over it because of that intervention, but not change a thing in your life. Because what brought you to this point? And I think that's what's so inspiring about your story, Diana. It's like you had this wake-up call, and it was like waking up from a trance, right?
I was robotic. I was kind of running in that kind of automatic mode, and it made me kind of say, what am I really doing with my life? And when you say, what is the meaning? I really think when the day comes that we have to pass in our whatever time and frame that is, you really look at what was the most important thing in your life. Was it how much money you made? Was it the house that you had? It's really the connections you have with people and the interactions and experiences that you have. And that's where travel and just daily things, when I meet people, I try, those are the connections that bring us together. That's the meaning of life. How can we make those connections with even animals. I love animals too. And like just connecting with your environment. And as you said, make changes. If you can't make changes to your behavior, like you said, it's going to go to the root of the cause is not going to be addressed. The root cause was for me working, stress, not listening to myself, not taking care of my body as it needed to be. So if we can't change that behavior, we're not going to change the progression of the disease.
Because changing behavior is everything. If you operate now with more awareness, with that attitude of gratitude, you know, going to Africa, it's going to fill you with joy and excitement and a positive thing to look forward to. Those are healing energies that support the cells to stay healthy. Helps your immune system to function optimal way. You cannot maintain health if you're under stress and angry and resentful and fearful. So anything that will support you in opening, being more expansive, it's like the breathing is so profound, really, because just breathing lets you release the stress and take in the breath, take in the peace. That is an energy of healing, and we create these crazy, you know, hamster wheel lifestyles that just keep us going, and we don't even understand that that is going against the very principles of health and well-being. And so you have, you know, some wake-up call, some realization that you need to make changes.
Absolutely. And one of the quotes I love is Virgil, without your health, there is no wealth. Something in that regard, that the wealth is really our health. That is the most important thing we can cherish and be able to do the things we want to do, experience the trips, the travel, the family, the connections you have with people, because that is truly what, at the end of the day, makes the most difference.
And, you know, I'm so glad you learned that important lesson, Diana. You know, it was such a gift you gave yourself to really wake up to what you've been doing, how you've been living your life, that was going against the energies of wellness. And you made those changes, and you just sound like you're much happier now than you were before.
Well, I think I could say I truly am, because before I wasn't really listening, and I was just treading just going through the steps, like you said, on the treadmill, the hamster wheel, and not really thinking what I wanted. It was like, I got to keep helping people. I got to keep, doing these strides in these various areas. But to what extent? And it's really a reaction of how we react to the stressors in our lives and how we change our behavior that will then really give us the idea of how can we make it better? How can we make our lives the most fulfilling as possible? And we do have those choices. And that's where I love to inspire women to say, you do have a choice. If you choose not to listen and not to take care of yourself, that is a choice. Unfortunately, I don't like that choice for you, but having women understand that they do have some choices in their life and that there are ways to make their life easier and less stressful, communication with their partner better, kids having boundaries, there's so many things we could get into with that. And so really finding resources that are going to help you make your life easier, and it's okay to ask for help. I think I mentioned that in the very beginning, that we like to help others, and if we can get fulfillment with helping others and making their day easier, I think that would be awesome. So
great words of wisdom. So in the last couple of minutes that we have, Diana, is there anything else that you want to add or something that we haven't addressed that you feel is important?
I think just knowing that women as a community, we have so much to offer each other. And my site, the Amazing Over 40 site, is for women to have in a community. And I know for you, Cheryl, you have your also site. And women can help other women. And now's our time to really shine and realize that we can change the world. We have to just stay focused. We have to know that we have the power within us. And that, yes, it might take a few steps. And yes, there may be some obstacles. But in the long run, we'll be able to overcome it.
Yeah, great wisdom. And so let's remind people there are two sites they can go to learn more about you. So they can go to your personal site, and do you want to say something about that? And then
Yeah. So my personal site, they can go to drdianahoppe.com, which is my medical site also, but that will have the blogs that I mentioned about my journey here with the breast cancer, my stage one breast cancer and the diagnosis and radiation, et cetera. So that's that site. My amazingover40.com, that's my site, online community for women to get weekly blogs, inspiration. We're going to have retreats. We're going to have amazing resources for women to really bond and live the best life, 40, 50, 60, and beyond.
And I just want everyone to know that your last name is Hoppe, H-O-P-P-E. So if you go to drdianahoppe.com, it's H-O-P-P-E. And if people are in the San Diego area, they want to find a good gynecologist, Diana is the person to go to. So it's good to know. It's good to know there's a caring, compassionate gynecologist out there in the world.
Yeah. There are some good doctors out there still. Yeah.
Yeah. So I so appreciate you sharing your story, Diana, opening up and letting us into the journey that you've been on, because it really is inspirational for all of us and lessons that we can all benefit from as well. And, just thank you for that courage to share the journey with us.
Well, thank you for letting me share it. And I really hope it helps some of your listeners, and I know it helped me to share it with others also. It's gratifying.
Yeah, you're living such an exciting life now. It's wonderful. Can't wait to hear about your safari adventures.
Well, we have another one next year. We'll talk about it. We have another show.
You bet. You bet.
Yeah. All right.
So thank you. Thank you, Diana. We've been talking with Diana Hoppe. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman. You are listening to What Women Must Know. And it's the beginning of Breast Health Awareness Month, so stay tuned, because I have more amazing information and guests and strategies to stay healthy and to ensure long-term well-being, and just understanding more about this whole breast cancer issue. I have some special offers. If you go to my website, Dr. Cheryl Selman, I have a breast health wellness package with my favorite nutraceuticals that have proven effective in helping to prevent breast cancer, many health conditions, and certainly help prevent recurrence if you've had that episode. So go over there, check it out, Dr. Cheryl Selman, and find the strategies that work best for you. So until next time, this is Dr. Cheryl Selman. You're listening to What Women Must Know, and remember, always honor the wisdom of your feminine self. Bye for now.